You're listening to the Reading Envy podcast, where I'll have what you're reading. Hi, everyone. This is Jenny, and this is a bonus episode of the Reading Envy podcast, sandwiched between some other episodes. One of my reading goals for 2018 was to do 6 speed dating projects within the year, which means hitting one about every 2 months. So in February, I compiled a list of books to include. First, I'm going to talk about what book speed dating is and how you can do it too. And then I'm going to talk about how I picked the books for this round. And then I'm just going to go through each book and talk about what I decided. I've actually been doing book speed dating since 2011. It's kind of incredible. I can link back to that original post. And the first time I talked about it on the podcast was in 2015, episode 35, but I had already been doing it for 4 years on the blog before then. The idea with book speed dating is that you're trying to decide if the books either in your collection sitting around at home or books on your TBR list, your to-be-read list, are books you actually want to read at all. And sometimes the numbers can climb and become overwhelming, and book speed dating is an easy way to kind of pare it down. So my general rules are I usually read about the first 50 pages of a book. That comes from Nancy Pearl, who is America's librarian. In her book, Book Lust, she recommends, you know, that life is too short to read a book you're not liking, and that if you're not into a book by 50 pages, to set it aside. I think I follow 50 pages-ish. So if a book is a lot shorter, maybe it's only 200 pages or 250, I may not give it a full 50 pages. If a book's longer, it kind of depends on if I give it more than that. There are some books I can tell right away are just not going to be my thing at all, and I may give up before 50 pages, but 50 pages is a good number because it gets past the stage of first impressions, that whole Malcolm Gladwell blink model. You know, not all books get right into what they are at the beginning. And for some books, 50 pages will never be enough. A book is sometimes a journey, and this is a kind of a strategy for most books some of the time. But if you've ever read Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, which I did, his basic premise is that first reactions are right except for when they're not. And while it's completely frustrating to read an entire book that comes to that conclusion, because that's no conclusion, it is a good reminder that sometimes books have more to them than you're going to experience in the first 50 pages. So I always say, if I have discarded a book that someone else really likes and they can make a compelling argument for me, I might try it again. And sometimes it's not the right time for a book. Okay, so read 50 pages, decide whether or not this is a book I'm interested in enough to keep going. It doesn't mean I have to keep reading it then. I have done speed dating projects where I'm like, yeah, I'll probably read that someday, and I keep it, but I don't necessarily get back to it. The end of December in 2017, I was kind of like, well, maybe I should finish some of those books I started so that they're not still on my to-be-read list next year. I got through some of them that way, but still not all. There's a few sitting in a pile on my floor that have probably been there at least half a year. Whoops. So the first few times I did speed dating, I focused on the books on my to-be-read list. The downside of that was that I had to seek out the books. I didn't already have them all of the time. So I was getting them from the library, from interlibrary loan, from paperback swap back when I used that website. And so I was actually adding more books to my collection in order to take books away from my collection. So that kind of backfired on me, that strategy. On the other hand, I had had books on my to-be-read list since I joined Goodreads, and I was able to take some of those out. I still have some books that have been there since 2009. Oh well. I think it's been more effective to use books from my collection that I already own in the speed dating projects. This time around, it's a little bit different. I have picked books that I got e-advanced reader copies or print advanced reader copies from publishers for books that came out in 2017 that I never got around to in 2017. So These books are probably, well, I wouldn't want to put them all on a rung lower than the books I would purchase, but sometimes they are more based on whimsy and my eyes get bigger than my time. And sometimes there's a lot of books that come out at once and I just don't get to them. This year, I'm trying to be more organized about reading advanced reader copies by the time they come out. Last year, I did not have any good strategies for that. So I ended up with books I never got to. I also kind of feel, though, like if I never got to them, it was because they weren't as compelling as some of the other books I had to read. So maybe they're not books I'm going to finish, and maybe I should decide and let the publisher know, thank you for approving this, but I'm not going to get to it, and then get it taken off my list, you know. Because I use two websites for the digital review copies. I use NetGalley and Edelweiss, and both of them keep track of the books that you've reviewed and not. And it affects your rating with the publishers. If I let it get too out of hand, people start rejecting me when I request things. And I want them to say yes. So I guess there's a double whammy. And then about half of the books, a little less than half the books I'll talk about today, I have in print. Whether I won them in a giveaway or a publisher contacted me, I have at least one that I didn't ask for, but it just showed up. So I'll talk about those a little bit as well. I will invite you now, before I get into my individual book experiences, that if you ever do a project like this, I'd love to hear about it. I actually have a friend who said they were doing one with books they got at a specific con over the years that they hadn't gotten to. So it's always fun to hear about that from people. Okay, so I'm going to start with a book called Collision by Marilla Kruger. And it's translated from the German by Rachel Hildebrandt, who I'm Facebook friends with, full disclosure, and Alexander Roche. I'm not sure I'm saying that name right. It came out November 7th, 2017 by Unnamed Press, which is an independent press. I was contacted to see if I wanted a review copy after the publication date, so I think I actually got this one in 2018, but I'm still counting it for this because it was published in 2017. Now, I've been in contact with the translator over the past year or two because she works with this project at another university for translated global literature and works to get global literature in libraries. And that's something I'm a really huge fan of. I'm always ordering books for my library that are translated that people might not have heard of. I read a lot of stuff like that. My newest literary fiction group in Goodreads reads a lot of stuff like that. So it's always something I'm interested in. So I said, yes, why not? This book is about a cruise liner out of Miami. There's a disabled raft that shows up on a European migratory cruise, so like maybe transatlantic, and it's supposed to be a thriller. So it's kind of about immigration or refugees, as far as I can tell. I only read the first 50 pages. It seems to be from different perspectives, which I usually like. I found some of the language a little bit clunky, and I'm not sure how finalized it was in this volume versus when it came out. I could tell that it was translated, if that makes sense. It didn't always read smoothly, but I would keep reading this. I liked the idea of the story. I go on cruises, so I kind of like that setting for stories quite a bit. And because it was an author and a translator and a press that I hadn't read before, it was enough to keep me interested. The book itself is not very long. Yeah, like just over 200 pages. And you know, some of the reason the language might seem clunky is because it's moving between people who are from different places. It could be intentional, and I may not have read enough to really get that yet. But this one I'll keep. Okay, up next I have Follow Me Into the Dark by Felicia C. Sullivan. And this is from Feminist Press. I believe I was sent a finalized copy. It doesn't look like a reader or advanced reader copy. Oh, March 2017. So I was contacted by the author of this book to see if I'd be interested in a review copy because she'd seen my review of Black Wave by Michelle T, which I've said a million times is one of my favorite books from last year, and it's from the same press. And so I said yes. And let me just read you the description. I think anyone who knows my personal story at all from the past year may understand how I reacted to this book. What happens when children who are denied love grow up? Kate is a young baker whose mother is dying of cancer. Gillian is an oversexed hyper-intellectual who's sleeping with Kate's stepfather. Jonah is Gillian's odd but devoted stepbrother who increasingly matches the description of the doll collector, a menacing serial killer. With Kate flailing in her mourning and beating back unwelcome memories, snippets of her family's legacy of intergenerational abuse are revealed just as the doll collector's body count grows. A complex, chilling expression of the deprived heart and the desperate lengths people will go to in order to create family. And the front of the book is a completely black cover with a belt on the bottom. So obviously there are elements of this book that interested me. I like characters who are bakers because that was my brief interlude, my alternate life, you know. I like stuff about family. I found this to be very, very dark, even just in the first 50 pages. And it's just not the mode I'm in right now in my reading, and that just happens, right? You kind of go through phases. It's not that it's badly written. I think it's actually very well written, so much that I was like, whoa, I don't know if I can do this right now. So I think for someone who really likes thrillers and psychological thrillers in particular, this is probably going to be a great read. I did not finish it, so I can't really weigh in on how it ends. I do like Feminist Press, though. I found some really interesting stuff from them. So I'm going to let someone else have this one. Okay, so this next one is The Faraway Brothers, Two Young Migrants, and the Making of an American Life by Lauren Markham. And this one does say uncorrected proof on it. And it comes from Crown Publishing. And I think this one I got from the publisher who I'm on a mailing list for. And they show up at the American Library Association conference and the Midwinter American Library Association conference. And when they have books left over, they just send out a notice that says, hey, if you want these, let me know. If you're a librarian, I'll send some to you. And so I think last year I requested this as alongside Beautiful Animals by Lawrence Osborne, which I've previously talked about on the podcast. But for some reason, I just didn't get to this one. And it's nonfiction. Oh, actually, let me think. This might have come with Nomadland. It came with another book. I may not be remembering correctly. I remember it coming at the same time as something else. So, of course, this is nonfiction, and it's a story about twin brothers from El Salvador who have moved to California, and they're called the Hermanos Lejanos, or Faraway Brothers. And so looks like one ends up in a gang. One has a journey across the Rio Grande and to Texas, and they're undocumented and then have to deal with all that situation. This one I will definitely finish, so it looks good. Okay, up next, Small Great Things by Jodi Picoult. And this was a book that got so much attention. It's from Ballantine Books, which is a part of Random House. And this is a rare occasion where a publisher sent me a book without asking. They just sent it. I'm never sure how and why this happens. Random House often tells me no in Edelweiss or NetGalley, but then sometimes I'll end up with a print book. So I just can't figure it. I think they must have an army of interns, because I think that's also how I ended up with The Heart's Invisible Furies, which I loved. But they actually asked me first about that one, so I just never know. Now, I have read Jodi Picoult before, but that's kind of in my older days where I was just kind of perusing the public library shelves and just whatever was new, and reading a lot of Oprah books. And, you know, not to disparage that, I read some interesting stuff back then, but I probably haven't read anything by her in at least 10 years. I wasn't pulling it off my shelf because while I'm interested in exploring issues of race in America, I wasn't sure that I wanted to explore it from the perspective of a white female author, because I felt like maybe I would rather explore it through the eyes of people who have actually had the experience. And, you know, it's a whole separate debate of who gets to speak for who, and I just prefer to read stories that are written from the perspective of someone's own voice. And so I just kind of had put it off. And then when I started reading this, I realized the other reason I really don't like pregnancy, fertility storylines are just really not my thing. And that's a pretty primary focus of the novel, because the main character is a labor and delivery nurse. And so, like, that explains a lot of the reasons why I hadn't even bothered picking it up. I can see that the first 50 pages jumps into the story really quickly, and probably for most people, they probably jumped right in and enjoyed it. I'm probably just not going to bother, and this is one of those cases where it's just not my thing. Just not my thing. I think the best book that I ever read by Jodi Picoult, I can't even remember the name of it, but it was based on Dante and the different circles of hell, and it was kind of graphic novel based, very outside of her usual, I would say. Okay, so far, two rejections, two keepers. All right, so I'm going to move now to my NetGalley pile, which is just one title. I do pretty good at keeping up in NetGalley because they tell you how long ago you downloaded a book. And that can start making you feel bad about yourself. And so this is Autonomous by Annalee Newitz by Macmillan Tor Forge. It's a sci-fi fantasy title. It came out the middle of September in 2017. It's about robots and robot romance. I don't know. I'd read a lot of reviews of this that gave me completely different impressions from the experience I had of the first 50 pages. I actually felt like the first 50 pages were very mechanical in the sense where the focus was on the actual machinery of the robot. I do find it interesting that the robot's using a human brain, but they're not human. They don't have access to the emotions and memories of the human, but they have access to the brain as a processor, basically, to provide extra processing power to their functionality. I don't think the book is where it's headed yet. I think there's supposed to be an actual romance between a robot and a human in this novel. From what I understand, I think it's a same-sex romance. If a robot can be male, I don't know if I think that. but I didn't get there. It was a really quick read. I would probably finish this one. And it is different. It does feel different. The cover's awesome, too. And that sometimes makes a difference. I'm just not reading a lot of science fiction compared to what I used to do. And so I think I'm partly more drawn to it for that as well. And that was the only title I had outstanding in NetGalley, so I feel like I deserve a pat on the back for that. Okay, so I originally had compiled a list of 10 from Edelweiss, but I realized that one of them I had inadvertently deleted from all my devices, and usually they don't expire on my Kindle Paperwhite, so I can keep them for a long time. But if they have expired, there's no way I can get them back unless I buy the book, which is usually a little too farther than I'm willing to go if I've missed it for a review copy. It was at the top of the list for a really long time. Okay, so the book is called Moonbath by Yannick Lahens, and it was translated by Emily Gogolak. It was winner of the 2014 Prix Femina and 2015 French Voices Award, so I do believe that it was French, but Yannick Lahens is from Haiti. Okay, it was published by Deep Vellum October 3rd. And I actually totally meant to read this one, but I also read another book from Haiti around the same time, and it seemed like overkill to read more than one, and that was the René Depestre one about the zombie bride, and that one was a lot of fun. So I'll read the description of this one, but I didn't get to it. It expired, and I had to just tell the publisher, I'm sorry. After she's found washed up on shore, C'est tout au même Thérèse, bloody and bruised, recalls the circumstances that led her there. Her voice weaves hauntingly in and out of the narrative as her story intertwines with those of three generations of women in her family, beginning with Olmen, her grandmother. That probably would have been good. I'm sorry I missed it. So another book that I've had on my list just absolutely forever, and I finally tried, is The Living Infinite by Chantal Acevedo. And I think the reason I asked for this one is because it came from Europa Editions, and I'm a sucker for their beautiful covers, and I always request them even if I'm not actually interested in them, and I really need to stop doing this, but I did it again. So this novel is based on the true story of the Spanish princess Eulalia during the time of the Bourbon court. And okay, so first thing, I actually don't really like historical fiction. It's just not really my top thing that I like to read. So I was surprised that I requested anything that was in that category. Usually if I end up reading historical fiction, it's for book club or it's something that was nominated for an award. I tend not to request review copy novels that are historical fiction because number one, I'm less likely to get to them. Number two, they're usually longer. I was surprised I had done that for this one. I'll just read a few sentences about it. After her cloistered childhood at the Spanish court, her youth spent in exile, and a loveless marriage, Eulalia gladly departs Europe for the New World. In the company of Thomas Aragon, the son of her one-time wet nurse and a small-town bookseller with a thirst for adventure, she travels by ship, first to a Cuba bubbling with revolutionary fervor, then on to the 1893 Chicago World Fair. As far as others are concerned, she's there as an emissary of the Bourbon dynasty and a guest of the fair. Secretly, she's in America to find a publisher for her scandalous, incendiary autobiography. I feel like if you are a historical fiction person, and you're a person who likes books about books, this is probably absolute perfect for you. It just wasn't perfect for me. And as my aforementioned issues with fertility storylines, the book starts where Eulalia is... Okay, so it must be right when Eulalia is born, but it's all interviews with this woman who's going to become her wet nurse. And so it's all about childbirth and breast milk and... I'm just like, seriously? Again? No. So that one's a no for me, but I can see that it would be for someone else. Okay, so it's funny because that book was headed to Cuba. This one is set in Cuba. It's called Hair in Berlin by Christina Garcia. It came out October 10th, 2017. So this is kind of an experimental style of novel. Oh, this is from Counterpoint. An unnamed visitor travels to Berlin with a camera looking for reckonings of her own. The city itself is a character, vibrant and post-apocalyptic, flat and featureless except for its rivers, its lakes, its legion of bicyclists. Here in Berlin, she encounters a people's history. So it's like a Cuban going to Berlin right after World War II. So that's a period of Berlin I'm interested in, but again, it's historical fiction. And because it's told in this kind of fragmented way, through random people who encounter the woman, it never felt cohesive in the first 50 pages. I felt like I could take it or leave it. I decided to leave it. It just didn't grab me, I guess. Although I'd probably try something else by this author. So next I have Beyond the Rice Fields by Nivo, translated by Alison Charette. It's the first novel from Madagascar ever to be translated into English, and it's from Restless Books, and Restless Books is one of the publishers that I'm trying out a subscription to this year. This book came out in October of 2017. I'll read a little bit of the description. Farah and her father's slave, Tito, have been close since her father bought the boy after his forest village was destroyed. Now in Sahasoa, amongst the cattle and rice fields, everything is new for Tito, and Farah at last has a companion. But as Tito looks forward to the bright promise of freedom, and Farah backward to a dark, long-denied family history, a rift opens between them just as British Christian missionaries and French industrialists arrive and violence erupts across the country. I feel like sometimes when I'm doing speed dating, I'm doing too many books in a row, and I probably should have given this one more time, but my impression of it at the 50-page mark is that the style that it's written in feels more like a story that's been told and passed down. It has this feeling of orality to it, or almost a mythology to it, where the characters feel like symbols rather than actual people. It's really hard to explain how that can even happen, and the storyline doesn't, or the plot doesn't sound like a book that would feel that way, but it just didn't feel like it was actually specifically about the people that were in it. It felt very old-fashioned, and so I'm just going to let this one go, I think. Next, I have The Time of Mute Swans by Eke Temelkuran, translated by Kenneth Dokken. It's from Arcade Publishing, November 7th, 2017. This timely best-selling novel about a military coup in Turkey, told through the eyes of two children, resonates deeply with events today. It's set in Ankara, which is the capital city, so not Istanbul, which is where a lot of Turkish novels are set. And this is the summer of 1980, so I don't know that I know enough about Turkish history to understand 1980, to be honest. And I remember starting the novel and being a little bit confused, because I know about Turkey in the 21st century pretty well, and I know what happened between 1900 and World War II, just from my Turkish language classes I took and my Turkish cooking classes that I took. And I read so much Turkish literature a few years ago when that was my focus for the year. And I think I just, by instinct, I just said, yes, I want to read this book, and didn't really pay attention to the fact that it's a war narrative. And I just am really not that interested in military stuff. So it didn't really work for me, unfortunately. One of the Turkish people I know is from Ankara, though, and I would like to find another novel set there, maybe just not from a military perspective. So that's my first round of speed dating, and it doesn't take me very long to talk about it. It looks like, counting autonomous, I'll probably only continue reading 3 out of 10, which is a lot better than I usually do. I usually say I'm going to read 5 or 6, and then I haven't taken very many books out of my collection. So as far as speed dating goes, my goals for the rest of the year are to do 5 more projects of about 10 books. I might sometimes do more, I might sometimes do less. I think I need to do some culling of the books I've collected for the Around the United States reading, because I've really at this point read a book from every state, I think, and some of my leftover Around the World books, maybe my Book of the Month collection that I haven't really read, and some random stuff that I've picked up from used book sales or flash sales of publishers. I just got a box of 6 books from Coffee House because I was a sucker. And let's see, I'm recording this March 3rd. I'm headed to the AWP conference next week, which has an enormous book fair, and I expect to come home with books from that too. So unless I'm going to use two rooms in my house to store books, I really do need to keep diligently reading, donating, weeding my collection. So that's kind of one of the goals for the year. So I'd love to hear about your speed dating or other ways that you cull your own collections. Let me know. Thanks, guys. Thanks for listening to the Reading Envy podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at Reading Envy, or find a complete listing of our podcast episodes, as well as all of the books discussed on today's episode, at readingenvy.com.